If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the supreme truth. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is Truth Realized Brings Permanent Transformation. Truth Realized Brings Permanent Transformation. So call yourself forward into alignment with that absolute divine truth, which illumines your mind with ultimate realization that you are divine, that you live within the heart of all beings, that you are, in fact, the heart from which all things emanate, that you are divine through and through, that your true self is immortal. It has never been born, nor shall it ever cease to exist. You are the very truth itself. That is reality. That is what our spiritual odyssey is all about. Realizing that. And in realizing that, every sorrowful, sad, and dreary thing is dissolved in permanent transformation. What has transformed? Simply our point of view. So again, take a deep breath. And commit yourself to truth. Completely make a commitment to be the truth, to embody truth, to search for it with every ounce of strength that you have. Because truth, reality, and God are one and the same. When Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one can come unto the Father except by me, he was speaking as that truth with a capital T, not as the human body, not as the person, Jesus of Nazareth. He was speaking as the Christ. What is the Christ? The Christ is the one that has awakened fully the truth. And it is the truth that is the Son of God, that is the soul of God, that is the Christ of God, that is the Beloved of God. And that is what transforms us into the presence of that which is called the Father, which in other words would be called the monad, the I am that I am self, the Spirit that you are eternally, the Atma. That which is beyond birth and death and change, the eternal truth, also called Sat Nam. So that is what we want to inquire into together tonight. And let me begin by defining truth as we are referring to it tonight. Truth is not relative. In fact, the belief in the relativity of truth, for example, my truth is different from your truth, or everyone has their truth, kind of a common saying that you hear bantered about. But according to Jesus in A Course in Miracles, that belief in the relativity of truth is defined in A Course in Miracles as one of the laws of chaos. In other words, it's one of the ego's dictums. But truth, with a capital T, or sat, satya, or satyam, as it's called in Sanskrit, is absolute and unchanging. So anything that has a modification to it, that can be changed, that changes with the times, that has any modicum of change inherent in it, is not truth. And once you realize that and get that firmly seated in your awareness, you can discern things as they come forward in your life as to whether or not they align with that highest truth, which means they're not going to change on you. They're going to be steady. They're not going to flicker or move from that position. And thus they become the very light. Truth becomes the very light that produces permanent transformation. You can know when you've had an encounter with truth, because your life will bear transformation wherever that truth has been integrated and firmly established. Integrating and establishing that is our job. That's why we have been given a vehicle through which we can move through life and acquire experience in life and senses, so that we can again gain experience in different ways with the elements of light and life. And in that way, we gain wisdom. We gain the ability to discern the real from the unreal, the impermanent and changing from that which is eternal and unchanging. We discern that which is of the element of impermanence, which always leads to death. For all things that are wrought within the illusion of separation from source have inherently built within them death, which is a great good blessing, because you would not want eternal separation in any of its myriad of forms. Illusory though they may be, they are the cause and the core of every state that is less than full bliss, total peace, in all pervasive sense of being. So that which is of the fiction is educational, experiential, but only in the training of our mastery. So we have been deluding ourselves with the idea that this body belongs to us, when it's really not ours at all. But by thinking that we are the body, we've developed a a blindness to reality. And that is what is defined as ignorance. So unless we can drive away this ignorance and move into alignment with the truth of our core of being, which is right inside the very center of your experience of yourself, unless we do that, we'll not be able to realize wisdom. We need to develop that discrimination that can discern very carefully the truth from the chaff. And to do that self-inquiry is very necessary. Within this body, which we could also look at as the house of God, the tabernacle of the Most High, is the spiritual heart, which is a little bit to the right and center of your physical heart. And within that heart, the divine principle of eternal light and life and love is seated. That invisible principle of divine unconditional love will take the form of your devotion as you meditate. It becomes externalized in the thought form that you create in your aspiration toward one of the divine images that captures your devotion, that claims your heart. And that is how the form, how God takes form in your personal life. That is why it's very important, why Jesus taught us that we need to love God with all of our heart, all of our mind, all of our strength, all of our soul. How can you do that if you don't cultivate a sense of warmth in the heart towards God? And so there's that sense that we have an identity somehow different from God. And everything in our Western indoctrination has led us into this false perception of ourself, of God, and of life. And that's why we, as a civilization, as a fifth root race, are destroying the planet. Because we've lost the sense of the sacred. We've lost the sense that creation is the body of God, is the manifestation of the glory of God. And we're seeing it purely through the eyes of the separated self or the egoic mind. So when there's the understanding or the perception, false though it may be, of God and the individual appearing to live separately inside the body, acting out their parts in a grand drama, so that they seem to come together and go apart as directed by the playwright. The truth is that there is one actor who is the playwright, who is the author and the finisher of all of our behaviors on this grand stage, this great leela, or play as it's called in Sanskrit. And he alone is, or it alone, or she, however you want to define that which is beyond definition and gender, has assigned all the separate roles of good and evil and virtue and sin. But in truth, there's only the one divinity enacting all of these parts. It's a great wonder, don't you think? This is what we need to bear in mind when we see the behaviors, when we see all of the strange things happening in our life and in the lives of others. But you know what? Your life is about your realization and what you've chosen to make of your life, and that alone is your business. Other people are making other choices. Every soul is doing what they've chosen to do, according to what they require to awaken, to crack that hard nut of ego incrustation that has closed off the radiant self and locked it within a hardened heart. But you've chosen to do something else. You're choosing to listen to this seminar tonight. It's not going to tickle your ears with fancy cosmic things that you really can do absolutely nothing about. It's not going to enlist you in the most current crusade to fix whatever. These seminars are designed to activate an awakened awareness within you so that you awaken from this whole nightmare. So that you never again reappear in this prison house of egoic play, unless you choose perhaps to step into the timeline to assist in extricating others who've been entrapped in differentiation and separation and egoic identification. Then you're free. All of the enlightened bodhisattvas, masters, those who have attained the highest divine realization, do not work in time. Time, as we've mentioned in last seminar and others, is the illusion that has been perpetrated on the fabric of time. Well, not on the fabric of time, but on the fabric of innocent, timeless creation. It's been fabricated by the ego's point of view, which is always projecting a future and dragging along a past, but is never fully present here and now. So it is the ego, egoic mind, the mind that believes in separate identity from source, that has projected the timeline, that keeps repeating the history, which is really war, a brief pause, another war, a brief pause, another war, because conflict and murderous rage is what fuels the ego. It has to engender conflict and warfare and hatred and separation and contention in order to exist. That is its fuel, its fodder, which is why we keep bringing forward the same message from age to age. The message does not change, that you are love. You are God's love made visible in time space through a human vehicle. And until that vehicle completely resonates that divine love, it will self-destruct at some point and die. That is the real meaning behind the statement in the Bible that the wages of sin is death. Sin is the archery term which means to miss the mark. So as long as we miss the mark, that we are absolutely indistinguishable from God, we're going to inherit death because the lie always self-destructs. There is no winning for the lie. It always self-destructs. So to live in truth is to live a life of continual self-recollection with a capital S. I am divine. I remain as God created me. In highest truth, I have never left the heart of God. Ideas leave not their source. And I am an idea of love within the mind and heart of God. So these are awarenesses that come to us in a variety of ways as we walk this spiritual path, our odyssey, which we looked at last week. So let's see if we can find a toehold here in your own life where we can see the evidence of encountered truth in your own life. So let me ask you this. Along your spiritual journey, your odyssey, what is the greatest thing that you've learned thus far? Let's say you were asked to write an essay on the greatest thing that you've learned on your spiritual path. Do you know what you would write about? Think about it. What is the greatest thing you've learned about life, God, yourself? Which are really one and the same thing in essence. Another way to approach this inquiry would be to ask yourself, what direct divine experience have I had? And how has that experience changed my life? Or you could ask yourself, based on your experiences, what do you know for sure about life, God, yourself? So if your life had a golden treasure, spiritually speaking, what would it be? What is the greatest treasure that your spiritual odyssey has gifted to you or revealed to you? I know it's asking these kind of questions which really require deep reflection that will produce a revelation of truth that will transform you. That's where you have to dig and dig deeply. Most people live very superficially. I think unless you're on a committed spiritual path, probably you've done little more than occupy space and process food. It takes a real spiritual ardor and diligence to keep going deeper and deeper beyond the consensus reality. And I found that a really dedicated spiritual seeker lives a life that's very different from the mass consciousness. I found as I've visited people throughout the years that people who are in mass consciousness think pretty much the same way. They watch the same television shows. They eat the same kind of foods. They have the same type of conversation wherever you go in the world. regardless of the language, it'll be pretty much the same. They think it's really great to have parties and get drunk and waste time. But you'll find that people who are really hungry for truth, they kind of walk to their own drumbeat. They're really different. They keep their own counsel. And they're often found to be the loners because they find very little in common with the average person. Oh, when you've attained some level of understanding, of course, you'll be out in the world involved in helping people and doing something, hopefully, that's useful in ameliorating and expanding awareness. But the difference is that whatever you do is purpose-driven. You live a purpose-driven life. And your purpose is to become one with God. It's to realize God. It's to awaken to your Godhood. It's to live as God, to live as Christ, to be Christ, to be divine. And so, you're patient and understanding and tolerant, but you don't cozy up to very much in this world. And another thing, when you go through difficulties and hardships, you don't complain and bemoan your fate and point fingers of blame. The average person will look high and low for anyone to accord a blame upon rather than to accept responsibility for their own state, their own condition in life. That is a very telling characteristic. Is that an unawakened, egocentric person will never accept responsibility for their condition in life. They will complain, blame, castigate, point fingers, but they won't own accountability. It's only by owning accountability for your life that you're going to see and experience a real encounter with truth. You have to prepare a place. And when the mind is like a gerbil cage of meaningless thoughts, of unproductive habit patterns, self-indulgence, wishes and wants and desires, how can the pristine truth find lodgment in such a mind? That is why we are directed to chant the names of the Lord, to do your initiatory tone or mantra, to take time every day to bring in that higher vibration of energy into your mind, into your physical body, into your conscious awareness. That's why you're directed to do something like A Course in Miracles that will bring that transformation and the awareness of that transformation to you with 365 lessons. So it's awakened. You need to be on a path and a bona fide path that has some track record in producing enlightened beings. It's all about lineage. What spiritual lineage are you following? Has it produced enlightened saints and sages? Does it have fruit to show? But you could say, oh, that's the tree of life. Look at the fruit. So there are certain lineages that are very ancient. And some of them have religious presentation in the world. But as soon as man gets a hold of it, unenlightened man is going to mess with it. which is why you always have to seek your own counsel, regardless of who you study with or what you study. You always have to check it out. Everything has to be checked out. And if it doesn't fit in your spirit, if it doesn't ring like a crystal bell in your heart, you might want to check it out some more. But always follow what rings true for you. You can find references sometimes outwardly in books. But the living scriptures and the authentic word of God is within you, not in a book. Everything in the outer world is a reflective, like a mirror, and it will give either a distortion or a fairly clear image. But the clearest image is your own sky heart. I was trying to think of how to say it in English. The Hridaya Akasha, the energetic field of the heart that reveals the face of God, is what you really want to inquire into. And when the light of your higher awareness pours down and illumines the interior of your head and shines down into the lotus of the heart, for the first time you experience a divine encounter that no one and nothing can ever take from you. That's called Atma Darshana. It is the vision of your own divine self. Those of you who have had that experience have never been the same afterwards. I've had several of those experiences. I was trying to think of one to share with you. I think I'll share the one of, this was 1978-79. I was in India attending the summer course of Indian culture and spirituality that Sai Baba was giving. He gave a few of those in the early years. And I was one of a handful of foreigners that were allowed to attend. And every day, Sai Baba would give one or more lectures. And we would have to wait from early, early morning in long queues to be able to get admitted into the auditorium, which was also always overflowing with all of Sai Baba's university students. So for the visitors, there wasn't always a room for us to get into the hall. So next best, you could queue up so that you could look through a crack in the entrance doorway, and if you positioned yourself just right, you might be able to see Sai Baba standing at the podium. So all day long, I was waiting in the hot sun with the other ladies, and after a while, the heat and everything just got to the ladies, and I noticed some of them starting to quarrel. And they were usually quarreling over an inch or two of space, which enabled just that slight maneuver where you could see through that doorway. And I was standing up on a kind of a high pedestal just above the ladies down below, on my tippy-tippy-tiptoes, where if I could move and stand up high enough to look over heads, I could see into the auditorium, to the podium where Baba would be standing. All of a sudden, a gale came, and it started to rain. And wonder of wonders, the ladies who had been squabbling over their seats a moment ago and afraid to get up to even go to the bathroom for fear someone would take their spot, They got up like so many birds, their saris flapping in the air, and they dispersed. And I don't know why, but the whole thing just struck me as being so funny that I went into what is called a spontaneous Atmadarshana. I had the vision of reality right then and there. And it cracked my mind open like a coconut. And I saw so clearly the whole divine play, the whole drama, the whole lila. And I went into a state of ecstatic bliss. And I opened my arms wide, and I was spinning and twirling in the rain with my head thrown back, just laughing in ecstasy and joy. And I don't know. I went out of time, so I have no idea how long I was there. But all of a sudden, I glanced over at the door, and I saw Mataji, who was a very, very cross woman in charge of the seating the devotees, and everybody was afraid of her because she was as cross as a Rottweiler with attitude. And we all kind of trembled whenever Mataji looked at us because she was unflinching in her discipline. But she was looking at me, and out from that door came her outstretched arm, and she pointed to me and crooked her finger, and she said, "You, come." Well, I looked around to see if there was somebody behind me or around me, but no, there wasn't. And by now, the ladies were all in their queue. They were all settled back again. And I was being called into the hall, the only one called into the hall. And when I got in there, thank God I was very thin and I could sit like a yogi, I was put probably in about 10 inches of space with my legs folded up on top of each other, where I could sit behind the first level, which was close to the stage, and where I had a really good view of everything on the stage. But I was pressed up against these metal bars and sitting in the smallest space a person could sit in and still be sitting. And I remember Sai Baba spoke about the spiritual path that I had been initiated into and have walked now for half a century, at least. And he spoke about the spiritual path of the divine light and sound of God throughout Shabd Yoga, of how you can realize God through watching for the inner light and listening to the inner sound, and use that yoga as a tracking device to move through the different levels of creation, of because everywhere there's been consciousness, there's been a created level that's manifested that we would call a dimension. And so the dimensions come out of the consciousness of many, many souls who have moved into those levels and more or less created a realm there. And through the divine light and sound, you can have an inner tracking device to know where you are as you move into that unified state of divine merger, beyond time, beyond space, beyond dimensions, into that truth that simply is. And it was the most illuminating talk I've ever heard. You know, I don't even know if everybody else heard the same talk. You wonder sometimes, because Sai Baba is an avatar, and so he speaks as God within you. And you can have 50 people or a group in an interview room, and everyone in the room will hear something different because we hear only what is meant for us, only what we need to hear, and only what we have a similar resonant field of consciousness to receive that particular parcel of information. So that's why truth has its own protection. Until you're at a certain stage of preparation and purification, you simply will not get it. You won't hear that deeper message, or you will hear a message that you interpret on a level that is in line with your own level of understanding. So it was a very, very profound experience. And that was a real, for me, encounter with truth, the Atma Darshana, having the vision of the Atman, my true self, because I was never the same after that. I think that was probably my 7th trip to India. And it took that many trips for me to be cleansed and purified and to have prepared within me, by Sai Baba's grace, a place where I could receive that experience. Although, interestingly enough, it had been mentioned when I reread my Bhrigu reading, which is a 5,000-year-old astrological reading that I had done in Mumbai from one of given by one of the 7 sages, Bhrigu being one of them. It mentioned that at that age that I was at that time, I would have Atma Darshana, but of course I didn't know what that was. After I had the experience, then I recognized it in the Bhrigu readings, like, oh, that was that experience. So I was not the same from that on. From that point on, I never again, see if that's accurate. Well, I had several experiences that convinced me that we are not these forms, and that there is one great divine animator of all these forms, and that the whole thing is rigged. There's no such thing as good luck or bad luck. We have set in motion both of these things through our own previous actions. We but receive exactly what is our just due. We are the author of everything, or the instigator, let's say. We're not the author, but the instigator of everything that happens to us in our life. We just don't remember, because sometimes that instigation happened a long time ago. And of course, we only remember a little bit of this present life. So life, as it is, divinely orchestrated, is extremely just and fair. Now people are always saying, oh, it's not fair. It's so unjust. No, it's very fair and very just. And it's just as you have created it to be according to your actions. And so, whatever we have in our life is perfect, regardless of what it is, because that is the fastest way that we're going to get whatever it is we need to awaken to in order to be liberated and get off of this wheel of karma and reincarnation. God is taking every single one of us home by the absolute fastest path possible. So your life is your fast lane home if that's what you want. If you want to go home to God, you're in the fast lane. So one of the great takeaway experiences I had straight away from Baba, my first realization, and you know, it's funny to say this because I've always had a close relationship with God, but having an invisible relationship with an invisible God and seeing the divine avatar in flesh, the incarnate God, is quite a different matter. And so in seeing Satya Sai Baba for the first time, I knew that I knew that I knew for certain God is real. I also knew that everything Jesus did, all of his miracles, were real, because I saw those same miracles being lived out every day as part of the normal ashram life food was materialized every day. Miracles were manifested every day. People were being healed every day. Friends that I knew personally were resurrected from the dead. The blind were seeing, the deaf were hearing, the lame were walking, and so on. And Sai Baba could manifest his form in many places at the same time he was giving a talk in the ashram. Other people would be having dinner with him somewhere else in India or on the planet. Or he would bilocate and get something, whatever, a photograph or something from a camera shop and bring it to someone. One time a devotee left his glasses, his reading glasses, home in America. And Sai Baba said, "Oh, I will fetch them for you." And he left his body for a second, came back, handed the man his glasses. He said, "You left them on the kitchen table." I mean, things like this were going on every single day. And so you realize that these stories about Jesus Christ and Krishna and Rama and the different incarnations of God were all real. The miracles they did. And that was a wonderful thing to have that. And the one thing that I got straight away from Baba was the understanding that God alone is all that is. And God is the one animating power that is giving life and animation to all beings, all forms, all life forms. That every name and every form that we have ever contrived and projected upon the formless God is of that same God. There are not many gods. There's one God. But that one God will take all of these different names and forms and manifestations so that everyone can have a conscious approach to God that is culturally pleasing to them. And the other thing is that when you're with Sai Baba, since he knows everything that's ever happened to you from the time you first were given existence, and we're as formless and as timeless as God because we have our existence in God. There really was not a time when we were not because there was never a time when God was not. So in that sense, Baba said, we are all avatars in the sense that we have all come down, as it were, from a higher divine state. But it's one thing to be an unconscious avatar, and to be realized and know that you are an incarnation of God, that you are a divine being. And that's where we differ from someone that has the assignment, let's say, or the dharma to be an avatar, is that Sai Baba has never not been that. He's come down without the need for any kind of spiritual practice at all. He never did any study. He never acquired his spiritual awareness in this lifetime. He came down perfected. And that's why he's called a full avatar. But he's also the embodiment of every name and form of God that we have ever conceived of throughout time. So that's why whoever is your chosen form of God, you will see Sai Baba morph into that image. During the time I was with Sai Baba, I saw him with my eyes wide open many times morph into the figure of Jesus Christ. Many times I saw him take the form of one of the other avatars. I saw him as Ganesha. I saw him as Krishna, Rama, Sai Baba, and Divine Mother. So these are all manifestations that come when they're supposed to. And it's important that in your life, you create a mindset that is God-oriented, God-focused. Because these things, these states of consciousness, sometimes will come upon you when you least expect it. But if you have trained your mind to stay aware of God, and you do that through little practices, I've told you how to start the day, how to bless your food, how to call in the light when you get into your car, how to incorporate spiritual practice into all of the mundane activities. When you take your shower, imagine that you are cleansing your aura, that you're cleansing your body. Repeat the Gayatri mantra if you know it, or some other mantra, or visualize the water coming out as violet cleansing water. Begin to incorporate spiritual practice into everything you do, so that whatever you do, you're reminded of God. In that way, you see, you will attract divine encounters. You will draw them right into your field, because we always find what we're seeking. Example in point, let's say you buy a new car of a particular brand. All of a sudden, you notice every car on the road that's that particular year and model, don't you? That's because all of a sudden, your mind is in that particular point of expectancy. So expect a divine encounter. At night when you go to sleep, ask to be taken into the heart of God. Ask for spiritual realization. Ask to be guided to what you need to do each day to transform, bring greater transformation, greater awareness of truth into your field. And pay attention at how your life is different from that first time that you put your feet on a conscious spiritual path. How has your life been transformed? Journal it. Write it down. Journal it. How is your life different? How are you living today that's different from how you lived 5 years ago or last year? Do you have greater self-control? Do you speak with greater sweetness and sincerity? Do you speak less? Have you experienced times of deep inner stillness, quiet? Are you experiencing more contentment? Is your mind quieter when you meditate? Have you been able to transcend the mind entirely? Because when you're really meditating, you're not aware that you're meditating. You're not asleep. You're not awake. You're in the Atma, the spiritual self. There's no time, and there's no sense of otherness. You have merged in that divine state. Are you feeling a greater expansion of your heart so that more and more people, you feel the same divine agape love for them, that unconditional love? You don't want anything from them. You don't need anything from them. You're not trying to sell them anything. You're not trying to manipulate. You just feel love, the same love towards everyone. That's when you're beginning that process of moving into the truth of your divine self, your real self, your immortal self. And when that separate identity dissolves in infinity, you are divine. So keep expanding your mind, your heart, compassion, your caring, not emotionally, because it's a very impersonal state as well. But you have a genuine embrace of life, embracement of others, and you let everyone do what they need to do to get to where they want to go. non-interference. But you take responsibility for where you place your life and where you walk in your spiritual odyssey. Because I know if you listen to us for any length of time, you're very sincere and very committed to knowing that truth that will set you free and permanently bring transformation. So do a little journaling if you like the week ahead. And begin to pinpoint those moments when you had a divine encounter with truth and it brought permanent transformation. So I hope this has been helpful to you. This is a very deep topic, and it's one that you're ready for, or you wouldn't be hearing it. And many of you are now going into very, very deep states of self-realization. It's a very, very powerful time on the planet. And nothing else will help the planet as much as your own God realization. That's the greatest gift that you could give to humanity, planet Earth, and the universe itself. So let's take a deep breath, and we'll go out chanting on I, you. On I, you. We close with a lovely mantra. Sarvesham Shantir Bhavatu. Sarvesham Shantir Bhavatu. May all be happy and have peace. Namaste.